Blog Talk Radio.
Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
That's right. The phone number is 347-637-3942, 347-637-3942. And welcome to the Patriot Nation Network, the American Allegiance Show. A lot of news going today. Sad things about Whoopi Goldberg and all that stuff, and really those things don't matter. What matters is our independence, our freedom, what's going on overseas with the wars and everything, and the rumors of wars and the economy. You know, not seeing things on the shelves is kind of alarming still to this point. It's been, what, 2 years? So we have to get that back. We don't care about this entertainment stuff. The Super Bowl doesn't really matter when you don't have a country. Anyway, tonight our guest is Mr. Ralph Pinko. And Ralph Pinko is on the line.
Hello,
Mr. Pinko, are you on? Yes.
I am on. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Okay, let me crank it up. Can you hear me better now?
I can hear you just fine, sir.
Thank you for inviting me on your show, Mr. White.
It's a pleasure to have you. Can you tell us about yourself, your education, and what you do? I know you're an entrepreneur and an author, but I think there are a lot more things you do than that, and that we'd love to hear your experience and your rich path and how you apply that today.
Okay, well, I'm more than happy to brag myself as as the great John L. labor leader and supply side Republican John L. Lewis, founder of the president of the United Mine Workers and founder of the CIO of the famed AFL-CIO, Congress of Industrial Organizations, once said, "He tooteth not his own horn, the saying thereof shall not be tooteth." So,
right.
I've had a long and storied career. I'm sort of the supply side. I was the youngest of the dozen or so of us who had the conventional wisdom, both the Republicans and the Democrats, in 1979 when Ronald Reagan declared for the presidency on the supply side platform. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was 814. I didn't look today, but the last time I looked, it was hovering around 34,000. Per capita GDP in the United States, meaning the average amount that your average worker made in real money, in today's dollars, in 1979 was $30,000 per worker. It's now $60,000 per worker. So in real inflation-adjusted dollars, people now make about twice what they did when we went to work back in the last efflorescence of stagflation, where we had a misery index of almost 20% with both inflation and unemployment running at about 10%. Now, unemployment's nice and low under the Biden administration, inheriting that from the Trump administration. Inflation is not double digits, but it's close to 7%. Inheriting that from the Trump administration, too, because it takes about 2 years for the Fed's flooding the zone with dollars to hit the consumer price index. And President Trump was relentless at beating up Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Fed, for having too strong a dollar and pushing him relentlessly to weaken the dollar. And ultimately, every president gets the dollar he wants. It just takes about 2 years for the chickens to come home to roost, and they're roosting now. So be prepared for some more uncomfortably high inflation. Unfortunately, Mr. Biden reappointed Jerome Powell, who is an inflation dove, or not an inflation hawk. Looks like he's going to be tightening up starting in March. The question is whether he will tighten up enough to quell inflation without creating a recession. That can be done very easily if you have a gold standard, but using fiduciary monetary policy, which is what the Fed uses now, using their best guess, although they like to call it the dynamic stochastic equilibrium modeling, which sounds very sophisticated, but in their own blog, Liberty Street Economics, they kind of sort of obliquely admit that it doesn't work. So anyway, rolling it back, the Democrats called supply-side economics, which means cutting tax rates. The top tax rate was 70% in 1979. And Reagan, with the affirmative support of Senator Joe Biden, cut the top rate from 70 to 50, and then from 50 to 28. Senator Joe Biden voted yes to both. Stabilizing the dollar so that you run inflation out of the system, that was the essence of supply-side economics. The stable dollar, preferably but not necessarily linked, defined by gold, and lowering marginal tax rates from nosebleed rates to sensible rates like 28% and broadening the base. That's what our prescription was. It was all laid out in a book called The Way the World Works by Jude Winiski. It was drawn from Professor Robert Mundell of Columbia and Dr. Arthur V. Laffer, inventor of the famous Laffer curve.
Absolutely.
Stable money, lower marginal tax rates, and after Volcker wrung the inflation out of the system, the economy took off at an amazing pace, and we saw America added more jobs than the second largest economy in the world, West Germany, under the remainder of Reagan's term. The Democrats called this trickle down economics, which was wrong and unfair and stupid. That was a phrase that was coined by the famous comedian who died in an air crash, Will Rogers, who used it to satirize Herbert Hoover, who was the poster child, the supply side's own poster child for everything stupid about economic policy. And we were attacked as trickle down by the Democrat, by the donks, and we were attacked as voodoo economists by the pachyderms, with George H.W. Bush, the iconic establishment Republican, as voodoo economists. So up against this wall of ridicule by both the Democrats and the Republicans, we managed to hold Reagan to his campaign pledge to stabilize the dollar and cut marginal tax rates dramatically, and that led to 20 years of really remarkable non-inflationary growth through Reagan, President George H.W. Bush reneged on his promise, read my lips, no new taxes, and threw the country into a recession. But then Clinton came along and cut the capital gains rate, reformed welfare, and managed to restore the kind of vibrant economic growth that Reagan pioneered, Clinton extended. And then we got George W. Bush, the former president's son, who messed everything up, followed by Obama, who gave us a very mediocre economic policy, followed by Trump, who gave us chutes and ladders, but ultimately he had the worst GDP growth rate of any of the last six presidents. You can say it was COVID, but let me tell you, if we've got COVID now and we've had the best economic growth rate since Reagan. Biden, who I like and admire, actually, I'm the only card-carrying member of the Conservative Party who is actually friendly toward Biden that I know of, has been very disappointing in terms of his economic policy, which he's in bouncing back from the COVID recession. We've had the best economic growth rate since 1984, so give the devil his due. But I go back to, I was president of the creation where we fought the Neo-Keynesians and we fought the Republicans who worshiped at the altar of a balanced budget, or as Newt Gingrich called them, the tax collectors for the welfare state, and we put America onto a generation of really epic economic growth, which we could do again, but unfortunately, somebody is intercepting my columns at Newsmax, where I write a weekly column, before they get to the Oval Office, before President Biden can read them and take my very good advice and quell inflation, restore equitable prosperity without creating a recession. He does not appear to be reading my columns, and if he's reading them, he's not following my great supply-side advice. So that gives you 40 years in about 10 minutes, Mr. White. I'm sure I could bore the socks off of your listeners by going into some of my other hijinks and adventures, but that seems the one that's most relevant to this show.
Oh, no, that's fine, because we have a very intelligent audience here, so we eat up these kind of things. But I'd like to hear about your credentials, your education. Tell us about your education.
Well, I graduated from Amherst College with a bachelor's degree and a major in English in 1975. I was technically a member. I'm technically a member of the class of 74, but I took a senior year abroad, so I commenced with the class of 75, and so it's a little muddled, but you get the concept. And then a year or two thereafter, I went off to law school, following in my father's footsteps, and got my Juris Doctor degree from Boston University Law School. Passed through, in proof that miracles happen, passed the New York's the New York bar. Served as a country lawyer for a little while. Caught the political bug. Came to Washington. Went to work in the General Counsel's office for the U.S. Department of Energy. Then I was detailed over to the Reagan White House, where I served as Deputy General Counsel to the President's Commission on Privatization. And then I was re-detailed over to the Executive Office of the President on the President's Commission. I think it was the Presidential Commission for Presidential Conference for a Drug-Free America or something like that. And then after returning to the Department of Energy and after President Reagan leaving office, the Bushes were very hostile to us Reaganites. Even though I had a career civil service job, I decided to rejoin the private sector and became an economic consultant. With a group called Bell Mueller Cannon. And then I went on from there to become the president of the Press Foundation called People. And thereafter, I left politics for a while, went into high tech as an entrepreneur with an advanced materials processes company and a hybrid exercise video gaming company. And then I ended up going back into the world of policy and politics, particularly having to do with cryptocurrency. And now I am a consultant and a weekly columnist for Newsmax, and I'm the general counsel to New Pavilion Art, as well as locate you, Mr. White?
Yes. So you broke up a little bit there at the end. That's pretty impressive. And, you know, I remember, I lived through all those years. Actually, I graduated 10 years after you did, actually 9 years, high school. So I can identify with you. Everything you're saying about these policies, I remember them happening and how the economies are going and how bad things were under certain presidents. So what is it like? So you were a federal employee at one time working in Washington, D.C. And
I was a career civil servant for 1,000 days, but I've been working in Washington, D.C. for almost 40 years. And by the way, as a sidebar, I contributed to Forbes for 8 years before pivoting and writing for Newsmax, but I'm also a recognized authority on the gold standard. I was one of the two pro-gold official witnesses, the only two pro-gold official witnesses of the 23 official witnesses before the Reagan Gold Commission. And I've kept my hand in the process. I advised the American Principles Project for 8 years and got a monetary policy commission plank into the Republican platform in 2012 and 2016. And I got Monetary Policy Commission legislation passed through the 113th and 114th Congress. And the dollar is good as gold, which is Jack Kemp's Unfinished Symphony, has been my signature issue for almost 40 years. Unfortunately, I'm up against some hurricane force headwinds in terms of getting the gold standard back on track. But I just wrote 7 columns about it for Newsmax. And you know what Ethelena White once wrote, lost causes are the only ones worth fighting for.
Absolutely. You know, talking about the gold standard, you think is the cause, are the big banks holding this back, just like the silver? Is that the cause, the case for what you're working on? Do we need to go? I know we need to go back to it, but what's in the way? What would you do if you were in charge of, if you can do anything to fix this economy and go to the gold standard? What has to happen?
Okay, well, first of all, let's not say go back to the gold standard, okay, because the gold standard is a timeless classic. What we want to do is reestablish the gold standard because it is proven by history to be the, if it's done right, which is a big caveat, I'll be happy to be cross-examined by you as to what I mean by that, if you want to do that. But if it's done wrong, it can lead to a colossal recession. That means if you set the price of gold too low, when you define the dollar in a price that a gold price that's too low, you can cause a massive, brutal recession. In fact, a defective gold standard was the real cause of the Great Depression, but it wasn't the real gold standard. It was a bogus gold standard that had everybody confused. And that's really why the political elites are so skittish about restoring the gold standard. They're confused. They thought that the gold standard caused the Great Depression, which is demonstrably not true, because we went off the gold standard in 1917 when World War I broke out. We restored a bogus gold standard in 1922. Called the gold exchange standard at a conference in Genoa. In 1929, when everything fell apart, we hadn't been on the gold standard for a good dozen years, not on the real gold standard. But it sowed immense confusion. My parents, when I asked them what caused the Great Depression, they said it was the gold standard. And that is a very prevalent misunderstanding. If you want to know what really happened, there is a wonderful Pulitzer Prize-winning history called The Lords of Finance, The Bankers Who Broke the World, by a man named Liaquat Ahamed, that is incredibly entertaining, incredibly well-researched, incredibly erudite. And it really tells the real story about how these guys messed up monetary policy, caused the Great Depression. And then, oddly enough, they fixed it and got it right, and drug us out of the Great Depression, but FDR didn't really know how he did it. He did it under the auspices of a commodities economist, George Warren, the greatest commodities expert of his era, but he stopped listening to Warren, and then they sterilized the gold inflows, and it threw us back into the Great Depression. If you really want to know what caused the Great Depression, then just read Lee Quadahammett's wonderful book, The Lords of Finance. So, sorry, I probably told you a little more than you wanted to know.
Oh, no, because I have done research on that. That's one thing I'm really very interested in, because it would make all the difference. And, yeah, it did happen just like you said, and I would be interested. I wrote that down, by the way. And also, do you think there's going to be a gold or silver squeeze coming in the future?
There's no sign of it.
Okay.
I don't check the gold price every day, but when I check it, you know, once every week or so, it's been holding pretty steady around 1800. And Mr. White, there's only one thing that creates organic prices, which are essential to creating equitable prosperity, and that's supply and demand. So if there was going to be a gold squeeze, it would be showing up in the gold market. The gold traders would be aware of this. And so, you know, who is going to be one of the great things about gold is it's useless. It's good for decoration, but it's not an industrial
right.
metal. So it's not subject to the changes in demand that come with the business cycle. So it's been a very stable stock to flow ratio of gold for something like 5,000 years. We add about 1 to 2% more gold reliably year in, year out to the amount of stock that's been mined throughout all of history. And so that creates a very stable base to deal with. And the gold standard doesn't constrain your creation of currency. Back when the Bank of England was running the gold standard, sometimes they would only have as little as 2%, and they would rarely have more than 20% of gold reserves against the currency in circulation. It's an indicator, like a thermostat. So when the price of gold creeps up, that means that they need to stop printing money, or its electronic equivalent, until the gold parity stabilizes. And if the price of gold goes down, it means they need to start printing money until the price of gold goes up to its parity price. So by targeting a $2,000 an ounce parity price and making the dollar legally convertible thereunto, then we would have an extraordinarily stable dollar that would neither inflate nor deflate, which is great because it's a promise that gets redeemed. It's an honorable promise that gets redeemed into the future. It makes the price of credit very reasonable. So it means that you can be gaining 3% in short-term interest rates, 5% in long-term interest rates very reliably, which is a good return for lenders and a reasonable price for borrowers. And that is having that kind of stability and predictability is really, really good for getting the real economic growth rate up to about 5% a year, which is its optimal rate, and which leads to equitable prosperity in and out for everybody, for workers. When Nixon took us off the gold standard, until Nixon took us off the gold standard on August 15th, 1971, after it having been wrecked by Lyndon Johnson, who closed the London gold pool, so there are both Democrats and Republicans who are culpable in this. If you watch median income, it rose at the same rate as the income of the top 1% of the wealthy. And as soon as Johnson ruined it and Nixon ended it, the prosperity of the rich took off like a rocket, like a hockey stick, and the income, the real income of us middle class workers, flatlined. And it gets worse because after Clinton left office, all of his successors, Bush, Obama, Trump and Biden delivered us very mediocre, subpar economic growth of about 1.5 or 2% a year. Reagan and Clinton gave us 4% a year. Now, the difference between 2% and 4% may sound trivial to some of your listeners, but when you compound that over 20 years, a 2% a year shortfall over 20 years compounded means that America's GDP is 50% less than it would be if we had held the Reagan-Clinton trend. So instead of having a $20 trillion GDP, which is what we got, we would have a $30 trillion GDP, which means the tax base would be 50% larger. And without raising taxes, the amount of tax revenue from the larger base, not from higher rates, would mean that the United States, the federal government, would be in surplus like it was under Clinton, rather than in these huge mind-boggling deficits. And it also means that people like you, Mr. White, and members of the proletariat, AFL-CIO, card-carrying members like me, would be, and your listeners, would all on average be making about 50% more without having to do work any harder than they are working today, because we would all be 50% more prosperous if we had had four presidents who knew how to grow the economy at 4% instead of 2%. And so let's just say you're making $100,000 a year. I hope I'm not insulting you by underestimating your opulence. You'd be making $150,000 a year. And that would solve a lot of problems, not just the federal deficit, but our ability to pay for college without having to go in, for our kids without having to go into deep hock with non-bankruptible college loans and so forth. A lot of the problems that we're experiencing today, economic, social, and political, are due to 20 years of economic stagnation that have mired us in a sort of slow-moving economic misery that is causing our kids to have to live with their parents instead of making good coin and being able to set up their own household and have their own babies and make the grandparents out of boomers like me.
Right. Yeah, independence, a lot more independence. And there's a lot of codependency out there because of that low economic growth. And I can see that, that's what we need, because that's a brilliant explanation you just gave me. I've never heard that before. That makes a lot of sense. So I appreciate that. I'm learning a lot just with you talking. So I know you have a lot of depth, and the fact that you write for Newsmax. I write articles for small-time papers. Newsmax would be a dream. So that's pretty awesome.
If you're ambitious to do that, sir, I think you've got my email address. So why don't you send me a few clippings and let me send them on to my editor and let him decide whether he'd like to invite you to write for Newsmax.
Wow. I appreciate that. That's awesome. And I also, just like you, I'm an author. So thanks a lot. I will do that.
I'm just a lowly columnist, but I have their ear and I have their eyeballs. And if you'll send me samples, between 400 and 800 words. I'm prolix, so I always give it an 800-word column. But if you just give me, three or four representative columns that are your ones that you're particularly proud of, would you tell your listeners where they can look for your work?
Well, most of my work has been on the Conservative Business Journal. I have a lot of articles there. I also have Conservative Chronicle. I only have one there, and I also have written for the Ohio Health Association. They do holistic health, but that's about it. I all the other writing is preparing for books that I'm writing.
All right. Well, look, if you just wanted to write a set, instead of sending them clippings, if you wanted to do an 600 to 800 word sample column about something topical, I'll be happy to send that along. And if they think that you might be, if they're looking for columnists and they think that you might be suitable for their readership, then they'll contact you. Okay. And if not, cost of an email.
Right. And yeah, that's the standard. When I usually look, I see that, yeah, they want so many words, and that sounds perfect.
Good. Nope. The only promise is that I will forward it on to my editor, and then it's totally up to the powers that be.
I totally understand, and I appreciate that. Just to have the opportunity would be awesome all by itself.
Okay, just one piece of gratuitous advice, one piece of free advice,
yes,
which is worth exactly what I'm charging you for it, which is nothing, and that is don't bury your lead. Okay, make the first sentence, make the first paragraph direct into the point. Tell them right up front what it is you're going to be writing about, and then go write about it. Okay, a lot of people, newbie writers, they waste their first paragraph with a wind up. So if you want to read a good lead, go to Google, type in Ralph Benko. Type in Newsmax, Opulence Through Capitalism, or even just Newsmax. It'll take you to my vertical, and you can, you can go click and read, two, three, four of my columns, or at least the first paragraph of my columns. And I've learned over many, many years, and having made many, many mistakes, I've learned how to write a strong lead. And so if you would like a pretty good example, go look at Ralph Benko, Newsmax. Go look at a few of my columns and you'll see what a strong lead looks like. That's my one piece of worthless free advice for you. Whatever you're putting together, don't bury your lead.
Awesome. I'm looking at it right now. Thank you so much. This is really great. You're my mentor now. You're my permanent mentor and what do you call it? Spirit writer. So I'm going to be on that. I have the perfect article for that too, and I've talked about it on my program. So I'll send you that.
Good. I'll look forward to seeing it. And if you're really good but not suitable for Newsmax, I have connections to certain other venues, and it might not be a complete waste of your time to have taken this effort.
No, nothing would be a waste of my time. Every little thing builds up, just like my radio program is a small one. And, over the years, I like it like it is. I love it because I have a lot of people, I have a lot of politicians on and people running for office. And I learned so much from here. Same thing with Newsmax or any other. I will learn from that so much, so many things and how to do things the right way. And I appreciate your education tonight. So I learned a lot from you being on here. Just a little bit of time.
This is a Washington, D.C. I'm calling from Washington, D.C., greater Washington, where no good deed goes unpunished. So now you owe me. So now you have to educate
me. Okay, I sure do.
Mr. White.
Yeah.
So I'm now turning the tables on you. Please tell me, please give me a 3 to 5 minute recitation of your mission, your accomplishments, your life, and something about yourself. We're Facebook friends. That's how we connected in the first place. So I know a little bit about you, but tell me more.
So, I started out, I was a military brat. So that's strike number one. Number two, I was in the military for 30 years. And I was also a federal employee for 25. So I have a lot of federal experience. I worked for an airline afterwards. And I learned about FAA. I was a screener in college, airport screener. I know a lot about things that a lot of people don't, that I've experienced. That's going to be the basis of the book that's coming up. But other than that, now I work as a federal contractor.
Yes.
I was on the Afghanistan program, and now I'm on the KC-46 program. So I learn a lot as I go. And so there's a lot of things. I know how they work, how they run. And I was an aircraft mechanic in the military. I know a lot about aviation. That's what opened a lot of doors for me once I retired from the Air Force.
Thank you for your service. Were you Air Force?
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Okay, because I hear the Navy's got a couple airplanes hanging around too, although I think of them as ships.
You know, what we used to sing in basic training when we were marching, I don't know, but it's been said, Navy wings are made of lead. I don't know, but I've been told that Air Force wings are made of gold.
Very good.
That was our marching cadence.
Very good. Very good.
So okay.
That's a very, very impressive background. What are you doing now? Is the name of your show Patriot Nation, or is that your, or is that a Blog Talk Radio thing?
That's our network that I belong to. We have a few hosts here, and then my show is called the American Allegiance Show. And that was born out of, I did a speech down in Naples last April, and last year in April. And that was the theme of my speech was about, it was about, I think it was half an hour long. It was like in front of 500 people, it was like my first time in front of this gigantic group. So I had it together. I practiced and practiced. And every time I took the dog for a walk, I would recite it. So when I got there, I knew everything about what I was going to say. And I actually didn't have enough time. So I had to cut it short a little bit, but I got everything in I wanted to. So I learned experiences more than anything else.
What was the theme of your talk?
The theme of my talk was, why does everything in government not work, but the military, which is a dictatorship, does?
And that's fascinating. So give me the TLDR.
A lot of things don't work because the key thing is the military is the only thing that has, people that have, layers and they have, everything is accounted for, accountability. From the very top, bottom person to the very top, everybody's accountable and they're all on one team. Just like in the Air Force, everybody from the cook to the general, their goal is to get the plane off the ground and over the target. And when that happens, then everybody wins. It doesn't work that way in the federal government, federal employment, because I worked there too. I was there for 25 years. And there, it's everybody for themselves, it seems like. And then you get into Congress and the Senate, there's nobody overlooking them. We have people getting top secret clearances that have no investigation. And that's one of my things. I love to see everybody in Congress and the Senate get SF-86 investigations for their security clearance instead of, giving them free. Things like the FAA, another thing, you have to have two ashtrays in every flight, because I worked for an airline at one time, or the plane will be grounded. So how ridiculous is that? Nobody even smokes in an airport. There's so many things like that that I've seen and picked up. I was like, how in the world is this working? So our government at the top, even the local level in the school, everybody is their own boss. And it's like, everybody's out of control. We saw this through the pandemic. We've seen a lot of things. I had guests last week, Denise Nystrom and Cindy DeVigilu. They were talking about how things are happening in the school system that we don't know about. But because of the pandemic, we can see what's actually happening because you're bringing your children home and you're looking to see what they're doing. This is why this movement is spreading like wildfire, because we couldn't see it before. Imagine if we did that with Congress, if we saw what happened there or the Senate, but there's no accountability. That was my whole gist of my speech. And it went over really well, and that's pretty much a basis of the next book I'm writing right now and getting together.
Well, good for you, but let me just harass you because you're worthy. And that is, where are you geographically based?
I am in Ohio.
Excellent.
Dayton area.
Excellent. Okay. It behooves you, sir, to run for state legislature. And after you've lost one campaign for state legislature, it behooves you to then run and win a second campaign for state legislature. And after you've gotten yourself oriented, it behooves you to run for the Congress of the United States.
Wow. I have thought about local office in the future, but that sounds like a good plan. I like that.
Well, it's not a plan at all. It's the only way that a republic, which is what America is, not a democracy.
Yes, sir. Exactly.
The only way a republic works is if citizens become and remain civically involved, and the more directly they do so, the better. And so it's all very well to have blog talk radio shows and to write columns and to write books, but there's absolutely, you're in Ohio, you're in the Rust Belt, you're in the industrial heartland, you're in a very strategically critical part of America. And so, number one, you're very well spoken and very thoughtful, but you're also, if you'll forgive me, you have an outsider's perspective. Now, there are pluses and minuses to that. You would be shocked. Let's get you inside so you can get yourself oriented, and then you can understand why all it takes is one member of Congress to change the course of history. And rather than, I hope I don't get you thrown out by the FCC by saying this, but rather than bitching about what these guys aren't doing right, okay, go in there, figure out how to get yourself elected, and then show up. Okay, no excuses. One person, Charlie Wilson, a Texas Democrat, a backbencher Texas Democrat, ended up funding the Mujahideen and bringing down the Soviet, the indomitable Red Army without spilling a drop of American blood by arming the Afghan freedom fighters. You can read all about it in Charlie Wilson's War, the best book on how Congress really works that I've ever read. The movie's good, but the book is great. And that was all right. Charlie Wilson, the inspiration of Joanne King Herring, who at age 92 is a dear friend of mine. She inspired him. She was his co-strategist. And this, she lit him up, and he did whatever it took to arm the Afghan freedom fighters, which opened up a can of whoop on the indomitable Soviet Red Army. They left, and 18 months later, Gorbachev dissolved the USSR. That was one guy and his mal, and his inspiration, his muse, Charlie Wilson and Joanne King Herring. And Jack Kemp was a lonely figure, ridiculed, calling for reducing marginal tax rates and stabilizing the dollar, preferably through the 1984 Gold Standard Act of 1984, which pulled America out of the mire of misery and restored our equitable prosperity. That was one guy, Jack Kemp. Okay, the power inspired member of Congress. Forget the Senate. The Senate was invented by God and the founders to stop stuff, and they're really good at it. It's the House that starts stuff, but in order to get to the House, it behooves you to either run for mayor or run for state assembly, or maybe even state senate, so that you develop the instincts and the chops to win for national office. So that's my first hectoring you. Okay, it behooves you, and by the way, it behooves your better listeners to engage, to make sure that their elected representatives are hearing from them politely, civilly, and intelligently on a regular basis, telling them what to do. And for the ones who are, who have the kind of patriotic, distinguished history that you do, to step up and to run for office. Okay, I'm going to climb down on my from my soapbox for a moment and let you plead your case.
Yeah, here's the thing. I have people like that on all the time, and I have been actually thinking about maybe that in the future. So, because I hear what they're doing, what they're going through, and I always say I am very proud because you're taking that next step, that leap into a new adventure. You're actually doing something about it, and that's what I like. I like people who act instead of just talk about it. And as far as blog talk, it gives me opportunity. I learn so much from these, candidates. Even if they fail, I learn a lot how things really are. Because what you see on TV isn't the reality. And so I was going to ask you the same thing. Have you thought about running yourself?
Yes, I thought about running many years ago. And unfortunately, I got derailed for reasons that had nothing to do with me It was just not the will of Allah. Okay. I came to Washington to learn my way around, and then I was going to go back. I was then a Democrat and primary the elderly Democratic incumbent in my congressional district. But the Albany political machine, Albany, New York political machine, smelled his vulnerability, pulled him out, put a state representative in, and Albany was 3-1 Democrat. And so he walked right in, and there was no way that I would have had the resources to take on the Albany Democratic machine, which was then monolithic. And here in Maryland, I'm one tiny little red dot in an ocean of blue. So it's not a feasible opportunity for me, number one. I've managed to participate and make an impact even without being elected to office. So I have not at all been idle. And you may not know me. In fact, I hope you don't. But you've experienced my work. I can promise you that.
That sounds pretty awesome. And those kind of things are achievements. Like I could say the same thing. Like I tell my friends, my new job, I say, hey, if you fly in America and you'll see my work in the cabin, and I have a lot of things that I did. So it's like an accomplishment there, but yours is impacting everybody. And that would be a big lifetime goal of most people, many people, not just the articles, but things that you've done behind the scenes. Kind of like, there are things that I did in the military, what we did, nobody will ever know, but we're a better world because of it.
Okay. And while you're gearing up to run for state legislature or mayor, I love mayors, by the way, so does Joe Biden. Okay. I'm going to give you a really nifty little cause to crusade on. Everybody needs one.
And sure. Yeah.
Do you know what you have to do in order to be seated as a member of Congress or a United States senator?
Besides sell your soul?
Oh, you don't have to sell your soul. Don't rag on these people. We have much better representation than we deserve, since most of us elect people and then orphan them instead of staying engaged and telling them what to do. Okay, so don't go beating up on the members of Congress. I know it's fashionable, but they tend to be very public-spirited people who could be making a lot more money as a lobbyist. So, no, I'm talking very.
I love the congressmen that we. I love the congressmen and senators. Not. I don't prefer some of them, but I respect what they do, and I have no problem with that. And some of those people, they're former military and they're professionals and they attack things that need to be attacked. And I have all the respect for them.
Yeah. Let's show them some respect because we pay them less than a first year associate in a New York City law firm. Okay. All the congressmen that I know about live in group homes near Capitol Hill because they can't afford to rent a whole house. Okay. People think they make a lot of money, but they got to keep a home in the district. They need a place to live here. They pay taxes just like everybody else, and they get paid a middle class income that barely makes ends meet. So stop hippie punching them, okay? But no, I've got the thing you have to do before you're seated is you have to take an oath of office to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I propose that by rule, not by statute, by rule, legislative body rule, that before you're allowed to take the oath of office, you have to take a simple high school level test on what's in the Constitution that you've just sworn to defend.
That would be awesome. That would be good.
Well, it'd be great.
A lot of these
people take the oath of office to defend the Constitution, and they have no idea what's in the Constitution. They haven't read it since 10th grade.
Right. So they think we live in a democracy.
Right. They don't know what the First Amendment says. They don't know that there are three branches of government. They don't know what the Article 4 of the Constitution has in it. They just don't know. So before we let them get seated, how about they have to pass at least a high school level test of mastery for what's in the Constitution? And by the way, if they flunk the test, then they get to study up and keep taking it until they pass it. This is not meant to be punitive.
Yeah.
But the funny thing would be, if this was a requirement, then I guarantee you people will start campaigning upon their mastery of the Constitution. And so as part of their campaigns, part of their debates, the League of Women Voters would be giving this test before they got elected. And it would be a fabulous civic lesson to these people that our candidates had to demonstrate this very basic mastery of the Constitution before they're allowed just to take an oath that they're going to preserve it.
Yes. I agree. That's one thing that we had to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. If you served in the military, I'll bet, I will bet that you had to demonstrate basic proficiency in civics, right, at some point.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, we didn't just, you know, repeat the oath. We actually lived it every day. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to Andrews or not, but everything on an Air Force base or Army base is red, white, and blue. The flag is on everything, and you swear allegiance. And people actually, this is the whole thing. When you go to war, you represent the United States, and you know you do. It's everywhere. So you know your place. It's not abstract. It's like you're there with all these other countries and all these other services, and you're doing your job, and you know you are it. And it's completely different than most people experience. It's actual living it every day. It makes you everything is pro-American. And the people that are woke are drummed out. I'm telling you right now. That's usually what happens.
But the other thing is you were a mechanic, right?
Yes.
I bet you knew the operation manuals for everything you were working on inside and out and like the back of your hand.
I knew that, and I also improved many of them through the manufacturer. I did a lot of stuff like that, because when you have that kind of mind, you want to make things better. You always, hey, this is a better way to do this. And you get smarter, because the stuff we had, I worked on F-16s when I retired, so they have parts that think for themselves. You have to be smarter than the parts. You have to be very clever. It's not the smartest people that can do it. It's people that are clever, that can think outside the box. And that's what you can do on the fly, and that plane's got to go. It's got to be in the air. So there's a lot of responsibility in those kind of jobs, a lot of danger. So
and
you're
going
to live in those environments.
You're going to make a great candidate, Mr. White. That's so relatable. That's so interesting and relatable that, you know, as long as you don't freeze up on the stump speech by attitudes, as long as you're saying things just like that based out of your own experience, man, they're going to love you up. We're going to have a hard time propelling you right into the White House.
You know, I like to be part of a team. That's me. I mean, that's what it's all about.
But my larger point here was the operating manual for the United States government is called the United States Constitution, and I want our elected representatives to be as familiar with the Constitution, all of its working parts, as you are with the mechanics of the F-16, and I want them, just like you, to be clever in terms of how do we make this high performing, okay? They can't do it until they've memorized the manual. And the manual is the Constitution of the United States. And somebody like you could actually start a national movement demanding that every elected official demonstrate at least basic proficiency and knowledgeability about the contents of the Constitution before they're allowed to take the oath of office. Otherwise, The oath of office is a ritual and a mockery, and it should not be.
I agree, and just like the founding fathers, they should be the experts on the Constitution. It should be, that's what they should be. They should be, they should wrap that up in a flag and into their being,
because that's what they're doing. But Mr. White, that's a platitude, okay? What I'm talking about is putting some teeth into it. They have to pass the test.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, they have to demonstrate, not just be proficient, they have to demonstrate proficiency. They have to show proficiency. They have to pass a test. Okay, you had to pass tests before they would let you put your hands on the aircraft, right or wrong?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, tech school was hard, but I made it through. Why? Because I passed the test. And so I became qualified just like they should.
Right. No, there's no shit about it. Just like you, Mr. White, are going to force them to be. It's not a matter of should, it's a matter of agency. Unless you or somebody decides to make this the cause that they're going to crusade on, ain't going to happen. But if you or somebody decides to make this the cause that they're going to crusade on and then actually crusade on it through thick and thin, like we supply-siders did in terms of restoring prosperity to America, then if somebody takes responsibility, sometimes somebody exercises their agency, and somebody becomes relentless, then that's how things happen. And so I love it. You made the mistake of anointing me your mentor. Okay, I'm designating you as the guy to make this happen.
I love it. I love it because, I mean, this is like expanding my mind right now. I like this a lot because things I've never thought of before, but I'm putting it together here. I'm writing all this down. And that is, I would take that proficiency with the Constitution, I kind of equal that to they should have security clearances as well, because there's a lot of crazy stuff going on. So, and that was my other platform. I actually have, there's a guy, Randy Firm, is running for Alaska Congress, and we talked about this on my show a few months ago. There's things that need to be done, and he's a good guy also, to reference, and he was an Army guy retired Army for almost 30 years.
Look,
so I like that in that same vein.
I'm not saying your idea is not a good one, okay? I haven't digested it, but it's not a political
one, okay?
It's not intuitive. You're basically, you have to make the case for your security clearance. The idea that a congressman should not be seated or a congresswoman should not be seated until they demonstrate through passing a test proficiency in the Constitution, nobody can disagree with that. That's intuitive. It's like, heck yes. So as a political something to crusade on, I just recommend that you start there and put your security clearance thing on the back burner.
I can do that. Yeah, I think we got into that conversation because of all the spies and relationships. So, I mean, that's ugly. I totally agree with you. That would be a really good one.
You military people are high vigilance. Citizens are not. And so trying to drag the citizens into your level of vigilance is a lot of work, okay? I'm trying to make this easy for you. I'd love to see the oath of office in the House of Representatives. And I just gave you the easy way. You want to do it the hard way? Well, I guess that's in the Air Force.
No, sir. You're my mayor here, and I'm going to follow what you say because that makes sense because we're so geared a certain way that, you know, we need to expand a little bit, a lot more to what you're saying. And that's awesome. I really like that. I agree with you totally, 100%.
Okay, I'm going to give you one more hack.
Go ahead.
One more power hack, and then you got to let me go. Okay.
Okay.
Since 1823, don't hold me to it. It might have been 1827. We have known that there are four modes of persuasion, or what they used to call rhetoric. Three of them are weak, and one of them are strong. And unfortunately, conservatives like me, not me myself, but conservatives like me, are just stuck on the weak ones. And it's too bad because the left really is proficient on the strong one. And that's why, even though we outnumber them by at least 2-1, they keep winning stuff, if not elections, at least, you know, policy fights. That's because they know this one thing. The three weak forms of rhetoric are description, exposition, and argument. And conservatives, boy, they just love to argue with you, okay? And nobody has ever changed a mind through argument. A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still, okay?
What?
The strong form of rhetoric, the strong form of persuasion is narrative, a story with a hero and a challenge or even a villain, okay, and a call to action to engage to protect something that we all know is valuable from destruction, either by an impersonal force like a plummeting asteroid or a bad guy like the evil empire that the Soviet Union was under Reagan. If you cast yourself as the protagonist or the hero of a story and you embody that story and you engage your audience emotionally, they want you to win, they feel your vulnerability, they know what's at stake, and you tell that story, okay, then you move people, and you move people to engage and follow you. And once you have followers, then you become consequential, and then you can make a difference. So when it comes time for you to move, when it comes time for you to, you know, engage and to become consequential by entering the political process, I just want you to remember one thing from this conversation, okay? Tell a heroic story. Wrap your campaign around a dramatic narrative. Don't describe, don't explain, don't argue. You can drizzle a little bit of that in there, but that's not what moves people. What moves people is a great story. You've got a great story in your past. You've got a great story in your present. And you can have a great story, a heroic story, in your future, okay? If you really want to make an impact and change the course of history, or as Steve Jobs used to say, make a dent in the universe, you do it via narrative. Avoid the temptation of description, exposition, and argumentation. It will make you feel good and get you nowhere.
Wow. I wrote all that down. I have it. I have this. I have a notebook for my shows, and this page is full now. So that is awesome advice. I really appreciate it. I thank you for this. And I know I'm going to give you some – I know you got to go. And fantastic program.
Well, it's been a privilege to be on your show, Mr. White. Thank you so much for having invited me on.
It was my pleasure. And, you know, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your wealth of information. This is the reason why I invited you. You know, I learned so much from your wealth of knowledge and your history, your experience, and about the gold standard, all kinds of things today. So you'll be hearing from me soon, and I appreciate you coming on to the American Legion show.
Well, thank you. It's been a privilege. And by the way, is this archived or were we live streaming and over?
This is live streaming, but that same link will be there forever.
Okay. Well, if you would send me the link, I am also the executive chairman of the International Capitalist League, which has 184,000 followers on Facebook. And if you remember to send me the link, I will make sure to feature it for a day or two on the Capitalist League at the Capitalist Manifesto, which is the Capitalist League Facebook group. And by the way, you and your listeners are all in. If you are good little capitalists, then you're
sure
invited to come sign up and follow us and friend us there. The Capitalist
League. I am a capitalist because I own a publishing company, small publishing company. We just added new authors this last year. So,
great.
I'm working on small business as well. So, yeah, I appreciate it. You are an awesome, awesome person. I am privileged to have had you on today, and I really mean that. Thank you so much. You opened up a lot of doors in my mind. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Have a good evening.
You too. Thank you. Wow, incredible. Oh, there's so many things I never knew that I know now that I feel like I could move forward with. This an incredible, deep guest, Ralph Finkel, incredible. I mean, the pictures he has on his Facebook page, I thought, wow, this guy is something else. And, you know, he's worked at the White House and done all kinds of things. He has his own business, entrepreneurship, and his connections. I think he's a great guy, and I think that helped me out a lot here in the future. I think one of the things, if I can get on Newsmax, imagine that. I think my head's going to be too big for everybody to talk to me anymore. I think I'll be just, you know, not myself. But, you know, that's not me. So, anyway, I want everybody to spread this show as much as you can, get it around. And like I said, next week, maybe more people hear it. And if he spreads it, the same thing. This word needs to get out. We need to know more about these kind of things. We don't see this with, you know, your average guests or anything. So it's just amazing. So many things and so many tips, and very knowledgeable. Well, this is going to be the end of the show, but at the same time, one more thing. I read that Biden is giving the Russians access to NATO bases. I don't understand where that came from or why that's even possible. NATO, as I said before on a previous show, NATO is us. NATO may have all these other countries in it, but when it comes down to it, we are NATO because we are the most lethal force with real teeth, and that's going to involve us, and that's why the President Trump made them pay their fair share, because trust me, I've been in NATO operations, I've been in NATO places, and we are it. They don't have the wherewithal, and it's just sad, you know, because everybody should bring their fit to the table. Everybody should bring what they have if we're going to do this. So I appreciate what the president did, and it's a big relief for us. And we need to do that moving forward. And some people don't need to be in NATO. Others do, and they're very loyal to us. I'm not putting anybody down, but it's just there's a big difference. The United States military is the greatest military in the world. The greatest technology. And you know, people in China may be saying that, or Russia, but I've seen Russian aircraft up close. From what I saw, comparable models they don't have. They have some good ideas, but you can see the workmanship, the precision isn't there. It's not the same. We have some geniuses in this country that are putting stuff together. And I'm so proud to have worked on those and seen how things work and how the technology is great in our military. It's incredible. If you guys can see it, we got to join to do it. You got to get the clearance. Go right ahead. It's a great career. You'll love it. Young kids, always an opportunity. So anyway, this is the end of our show, and I appreciate everybody listening. Have a great evening. And next week, we're going to have another great guest. I don't know if we can top this one. Maybe. Don't know yet, but I'll have to see and listen to that. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Mr. Ralph Finkel, for unloading all that knowledge on us. A lot of things we don't see because we don't know, but there are people out there that have that knowledge and experience that can teach us, and we appreciate it. I appreciate it so much, and I wonder if next week our guest, we'll announce that here probably this weekend. It's the guy, if you guys remember during the Trump rally, Donald Trump Jr. was talking about, he's trying to think of what things Biden are good at, and there's a guy in the audience that yelled out, stealing elections. That guy is Uncle Sam, and Uncle Sam's been busy lately, but he's going to be on my program, hopefully soon. And Donald Trump Jr. even called him, thank you, Uncle Sam. This is the guy who's got guts. He looks like Uncle Sam, the real thing. he sings and everything, and he's going to be appearing hopefully with the guy who wrote, Let's Go Brandon, The Wreck. So, and hopefully they're going to be together because they're touring together, and when they have some time, we can record it another time and then rebroadcast it, you know, different date, and that's not a problem. And I've done a lot of that lately, and it seems to be working out because I can make an endless on-demand program that way. And these programs that you hear today, like these shows, you're going to see that I actually, you're able to do that on my program. You're actually able to listen to it continuously. All the programs we have on Patriot Nation Radio are there permanently. Just go through the library, and you can look at anything and listen to anything on demand. Just wanted to let you know. So if you miss a show, you don't ever miss a show. You can just go there and get it. Look for the link. So it's the blogtalkradio.com/PatriotNation/American Allegiance, or all the other shows that are on the network. And all the other DJs, you call them, or your talk show hosts, we're all there. And we appreciate you supporting us. Not monetarily, but in spirit. We don't ask for money. We're not like that. We give our knowledge out for free. Appreciate everybody. Everybody take care. Catch you next week. Thank you. Goodbye.